Hello, I'm Duncan Knott, and you're listening to Panel Borders, which was first heard on Resonance 104.4 FM. Today I'll be talking to Karen Wenborn of Classical Comics, who have adapted Shakespeare plays such as Henry V and Macbeth, as well as classic novels such as Jane Eyre and Great Expectations.
None of us come from a publishing background, none of us come from a comic background, but what we did have was the idea that we could change the way kids are drawn into literature. And every child starts reading comics, but it's usually Beano and Dandy. And we thought, that's great, but let's draw them into literature using the same thing. So where should we start? And I was into, let's do John Wyndham or, you know, something. And Claire said, oh, William Shakespeare. I'd always struggled with William Shakespeare myself. And I said, well, it's not too sure. And he said, how about we do three text versions? And the idea for our text versions came about just like that. So we have the original text, we have a plain text version that's translated into modern English, and then quick text as an entrance-level book. Sounds like a good idea. If we'd realised then, A, how long it takes to produce each book, and B, the more interesting things we were adding to the mix by doing three text versions, we'd have probably stopped. But 9 months later, we've got the first book out, which is Henry V, and that is in three text versions. And so far today at the show, we've had massive interest from teachers, which is what we're aiming for. It's meant to be educational. Who are saying, why hasn't anyone done this before? Don't know. Because it's very, very expensive to do, I suspect, and let us say each book takes 9 months, about £45,000 to set up.
When you first started approaching putting this together, I mean, how did you, with no experience, go about finding artists for it? Was it just a case of see who comes to you, or did you have anything particular in mind that you wanted to achieve with it?
We came to the Bristol Expo. It was our first real foray into finding artists, but Clive had already met John Howard, who's illustrated Spider-Man for Panini, that sort of thing. And John put us in touch with quite a number of other artists. But because our style is very, very different and classic rather than cartoon, and is a million miles away from manga, matching the right artist to the right book is far more difficult than we originally thought. But we've got people like John M. Burns doing Jane Eyre from scratch through to watercolour, and then John Howard with Nigel Dobbin colouring, doing Macbeth. Books at opposite ends of a spectrum. And then John Stokes is doing Great Expectations. We've got Christmas Carols on the go now with Mike Collins. But now we're struggling to find an artist for Romeo and Juliet, because that's a very specific style.
So I suppose it's quite a good opportunity to have a different style for each different genre. It's not a kind of a house style that we are adapting it so it will look like this and the text then slots in. It's creating something extra.
It is, because Henry V, for instance, I think looks like a French tapestry in its line and its colouring, which is obviously in the back of Neil Cameron's mind, whereas Macbeth is really medieval, which is gothic and gruesome. Frankenstein is frankly terrifying. So they're all very, very different styles. Yeah, Jane Eyre's beautiful pastels and colourful, and you know, yeah, so all entirely different.
Have you had much pushback from people when it comes to the plain text and the quick text version, sort of saying, I suppose on the one hand there's the, oh, you're dumbing down Shakespeare, which will be trotted out no matter what you do, I expect, but they might come along and say, oh, well, we're not sure about being done for the text generation.
We've had the dumbing down accusation, which is interesting, because if you're publishing the three different text versions, I'm not sure how you can be actually dumbing it down, because it's a range. The National Association for Teaching of English support our books, and the British Shakespeare Company think they're absolutely fantastic. When I was interviewed on the Ulster radio programme, the guy said, is it text version as in telephone text style? No, I can't do that. No, it's just actually a quicker version of the text.
Is the idea that you can get these into schools so that you can start someone on the quickest text version, then develop it as they go through the age ranges, or is it just depending on who wants to teach it and how they want to teach it, and maybe just get it through to the audience in whichever way you feel you can, and here's a choice?
The curriculum demands that every school child does William Shakespeare and recommends the plays, prescribes the plays, different set plays every year. So they're designed to meet that. And Bronte, Oscar Wilde, Dickens, and Shelley are all on the curriculum recommended reading list. So it matches the needs of the schools, but hopefully provides a really good read for the children. And so far the enthusiasm has been about the artwork, the battle scenes, more swords, more gore, please, you know. And the girls in the class, it's so stereotypical, which is quite upsetting. I said, oh, can we have Jane Eyre? Well, hey, okay. So we provide a range depending on the wants of the school children, but the schools are buying them as a need. They're also using it for the Getting Boys to Read campaign and Reluctant Readers, which is a huge thing. Literacy is a problem, not only in this country, but in Europe and America too. And if this gets any sort of eight-year-old into actually reading literature, well, it's job done for us.
Have you had much back on the idea of using comics, which are traditionally not very educational, or at least there's this perception that they are, and then you're saying, actually, no, this is the best way to do it? I suppose the thought springs to mind because when I was little, I started off by reading comics like Mr. and Chips and Beano and things like that. And I'm sure one way or another that helped me to read a bit better or, you know, come across a few different things. And it's maybe not so obvious that young children come across that these days.
That's an interesting one. There are lots of things now like First News, which is a newspaper for children, which they're hoping that gets them into literature and reading. Comics are still there, but the market isn't like it was when certainly I was a child, but there wasn't a PlayStation then and computer games and everything else, so a different situation. We've had people say, is this the best way to do it? They need to read plain text. Why? If the words are all there, why make it any harder? Why not make it really interesting? Why not let them see the battle? I mean, these are plays. They should be seen, at least with the books you can actually see them.
And when you were looking at how the art should look and how to present it, from what I've seen, it's done as you'd see a play today. I mean, did you have the thought, well, maybe we should go for the real Elizabethan approach and say have men dressed as women playing women, depending on the play and things like that, and really go for the kind of the full original take on it?
That's a really interesting one, actually. I think from the reader's point of view, it's better to do it in a way that they would find natural now. And I think a lot of school children would find it confusing to see all these people dressed up as men and women who weren't really. Or maybe that would just be encouraging cross-gender integration. I don't actually know. Maybe it would be a good thing. And I don't think we'd change that for the future. There's authenticity in the words. And I think we can depict it. We've not put anything out of time or in modern day or set them on different planets or anything else like that. But no, the women are women.
Mm. Maybe that's one for another day. But is there maybe any thought of taking it beyond literature and looking at maybe historical things? I know there seems to be a bit of a resurgence coming up of historical comics recently. You've got Warren Ellis's Cressy, and I know in an interview when we talked to Leah Moore a few weeks back, they were talking about historical comics and picking up sort of themes from history as just good subject matter and good source material that could easily be turned into something that's not there at the moment.
That's a really great idea, actually. So something brand new rather than taking something somebody else has worked with. Because Shakespeare is a difficult one, because Shakespeare and history aren't necessarily the same thing, particularly when it comes to Richard III, which I'm having a terrible time reconciling myself to, because I keep saying to you, but you know that's wrong, don't you? You didn't actually do this. So actually taking history and drawing them from scratch, but it's a much bigger script writing job. Great, because we get to do it to the size and style we want. And we have got the works of Shakespeare to get through first.
So just a bit to start with then, you know.
I think it's going to sort of outsee my lifetime, actually. Yes, yeah, so lots.
Have you had any interest or is any, I suppose, thought of looking to more recent authors? There's been a lot of crossover between modern, just plain text fiction authors who have then moved into comics. People like Brad Meltzer recently, sort of building on that and sort of picking up on that trend as well.
Is it Dean Kuntz Frankenstein being put through as a graphic novel version? and a woman, Karen, someone who's doing her first graphic novel. Massive crossover from mainstream authors, yeah. Well, I'm looking at things like other classics to me, at least, like John Wyndham and H.G. Wells to a certain extent, but that sort of era. I'd like to do Brave New World, which I think would be an absolutely marvellous book. Any further than that, I hadn't really thought of, because ideally then you'd go and commission a work, wouldn't you? Or take something you particularly love. I think you've got to have a passion about whichever book you're doing. And for me, 1950s classics would be huge. I don't know where from that, because there's so much to do now. We're going to produce something like 7 or 8 books next year. And frankly, that's enough to give me nightmares about thinking about the year after that. If you think about the books taking between 9 and 12 months, let's say, to produce, you've really got to second guess, because we've just had a massive change in the government body that rules schools. The curriculum's changed. It could do it again next year, and they could wipe those Shakespeare set texts from the curriculum. So what we need to do is get all of Shakespeare out, PDQ, and then follow. I don't think they're ever going to change Dickens and Bronte and whatever else. I think they've had that debate and they're leaving them in, which is all well and good. They should have a choice between Artemis Fowl and Jane Eyre. It was a choice I had as a child. These children now need it too. So it's going to be interesting to see how we choose what we do in the future and how the industry changes, because as far as I can see, graphic novels are becoming more and more popular, and the more mainstream authors that cross over, the snowball will get bigger and bigger.
Just thinking back to something you mentioned earlier, when you're talking about Richard III and how to make those decisions as to how you portray it, what's right, what's wrong, what's strictly historically right, or what was historically right to the Elizabethans, I suppose, and putting the right message across. Do you find that you come across, or you find your role turns into almost a director or a stage director, to say, well, we won't portray it like this, let's put this spin on it or that spin on it, that maybe it's just sort of beyond the sort of the straight publishing that you might have expected?
That was a really interesting debate, and I was overruled on that, because I found it really difficult, particularly with Richard. And I said, but this is factually inaccurate. So what I'll get to do is put some pages in the front and say, this is the actual history of the period, okay? This is about William Shakespeare. This is why he wrote it the way he wrote it. He wanted to keep his right to be one of the king's men and the royal approval and everything else. So, I mean, dissing the Tudors wasn't a good idea in that time. But we can't change the way Shakespeare wrote it. So I can put commentary in there, but I can't change the play. Because I see he's actually quite a handsome bloke by all accounts. Oh, no, he's going to be, you know, hunchback.
And this is perhaps going back to what is still in the back of my head from when I did Shakespeare at school, which was a bit few and far between. Have you gone for the big name plays to start with, or have you decided to, well, let's start with the history plays or the more outlandish stuff like The Tempest? How do you choose which one comes first?
We chose on the basis at first of the ones that we actually liked, and then went, ooh, national curriculum, let's see if that matches. So Macbeth and Henry were the first two. But next year we will have The Tempest, Romeo and Juliet, Much Ado About Nothing, and everything else which catches up with the curriculum. On the rest of the books, the non-Shakespeare, we get to have healthy debate. And since I'm the one that reads more fiction, I've usually got the loudest voice on that. And Shakespeare plays, Clive has read nearly all of them, and he tends to have the casting vote. So.
That's brilliant. Well, thank you very much.
If you enjoyed that and would like to know or hear more, go to www.panelballers.com, where you can find more information about the show and download the podcast. Join us next week when Virginie Sellavy will be talking to Jamie Delano and Matt Brooker about their contributions to the Edgar Allan Poe anthology, Nevermore. See you next week.